This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina is home to a strong writing community, a community that has flourished in part because of an equally strong literary ecosystem. It's an ecosystem comprised of independent bookstores, publishers, libraries, and an engaged community of readers. The inaugural Read Local Book Festival is happening in downtown Durham this weekend, and it celebrates the literary scene with workshops, author dinners, and much, much more. I'm joined today by three writers who are participating in the festival, whose work highlights the wide range of writing that goes on in this state. Joining me first is Catherine Dubois. She is a professor of history at Duke University, but also a prolific romance author, writing under the name of Catherine Ash. Catherine, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here again.
We should go back and tell this story a little bit, because you were not out as a romance writer when you were over there at Duke.
Right. There, I came out shortly before I was on your show the first time. I used to be two people. I used to be just Catherine Brophy Dubois, the professor of medieval history, and then I was also Catherine Ash, the secret romance author. And I kept these worlds apart. And then I was outed by accident, actually, surprisingly enough, by the Durham Public Library. I was very gratefully outed by the library and by Duke. And I was really thrilled because both of my worlds accepted the other identity. So
you're a little bit nervous about what your friends in the academy might think.
I was pretty nervous about that, yeah.
Your husband, Lorraine Dubois, teaches, is also a professor at Duke.
Yes, indeed.
I have this funny picture of before you're out of him reading one of your novels under Catherine Ash. You walk in and he's got, and the cover's got the buff guy and the beautiful woman, yeah. And he's hiding it under his shirt trying to explain, and then you say, I'm Catherine Ash.
Yeah, it's the perfect scenario for a romance novel. Frank, I'm gonna do that. I'm going to write that novel that is the fantasy.
My name in the acknowledgement.
Exactly.
So you're moderating a panel discussion this weekend about writing about sex. Tell us how you approach that.
Exactly. Well, we have the panel or my writing in my fiction. The panel is fiction writers as well as nonfiction writers as well as historians, and so we'll be talking about what brought you to writing, either writing. And this panel really is writing sex and writing about sex, both. And I think good fiction writers are doing both. They're writing sex, but they're also writing about sex when they write it. So they're making a commentary on it in some way or another. And for me, mainstream romantic fiction is. Right now, it's sexually explicit. It's fairly sexually explicit. I write what is comfortable to me according to my notions of gender and my notions of relationship. So when I approach writing about physical intimacy, it always has to be something that might not necessarily be what we call on market, but it's something that makes it meaningful as part of the communication between the characters.
So what is on market?
On market is pretty, what we call, the terminology we use is sweet or hot. Mm-hmm. And on market is very hot right now with the popularity of certain novels and movies in the past few years.
In terms of the text, does this mean very explicit, very graphic, you know, lots of nouns and verbs?
There is a real variety. Yeah. Interestingly enough, in the past decade or so, the two quickest growing sub-genres in romantic fiction have been inspirational romance, which is very, very sweet and usually has Christian themes, and erotic romance, which is very, very hot. And those have been equally increasing in number. They're still not the largest sectors of romance fiction. Mainstream romance is somewhere in the middle.
Can I get you to read a section from one of your books? Maybe you can set it up for us.
I'd love to. This is from my book called I Loved a Rogue. It's what we call a reunion story. Here it's a story where the hero and heroine have known each other. In fact, they knew each other their entire lives, and then they separated when they were younger, when they were late teens, and they came back together again 11 years later, and they're on a quest to find her parents. She's an orphan. And this is just a brief moment in the early moments of their reunion. The clopping of shod hooves upon cobbles sounded nearby, and Taliesin appeared beneath the archway, leading a horse by either hand. The stallion jerked its head. The other horse, a sleek young chestnut mare, tilted her face to the man guiding her as though seeking his attention. Eleanor's breaths left her in tiny bits of memory. Seeing him like this, years ago, beneath the shadow of tree cover, she had invented a story. In some ancient past, the moon had wagered the sun that she could bear a son of such dark beauty, with hair black as a Saracen's and eyes like shining onyx, that forever after all who saw him would be jealous of the night. The moon's boast came true. The prince of night was born to her, black-eyed and handsome as the stars. Conceding defeat, the regal sun gifted the boy with wisdom and strength so that every creature would be drawn to him and find happiness. For his part, the prince loved only one maiden, as fair and frail as he was dark and strong, and as ordinary as he was beautiful. Confined in a bower of twining vines, the maiden wished for him, waited for him, and each day he would come. She knew she was loved, and never fearing to lose him, she rejoiced in his visits, but secretly she hoped that one day he would destroy the vines and take her with him. A fanciful tale written by an infatuated girl the season before Taliesin had left St. Petrarch without a word.
That's an excerpt from the novel I Loved a Rogue by romance author Catherine Ash, who is also Catherine Dubois, a professor of history at Duke University. She's one of those participating in this weekend's inaugural Read Local Book Festival in downtown Durham. And I understand that your approach to writing romantic fiction, it's historical in nature, but you take the history part very seriously, right?
I do a lot of research. Yeah, I do a lot of research for each book. I'm actually really sore all over my entire body today because I'm writing a story about a fencer, and he is giving fencing lessons to the heroine. So I am taking fencing lessons here in Durham, and it was brutal yesterday. So if my fencing instructor is out there listening to this, thanks a bunch. I'm real sore today. Yes,
wow. So it's a lot of stuff. Well, I'm joined now by a second participant in this week's festival, Murr Lafferty. Murr is an award-winning speculative fiction writer and a regular podcast producer. Welcome back to The State of Things, Murr. How long were you?
Thanks for having me here.
You are participating in a dinner on Saturday with other science fiction authors. What is the science fiction community like here? How robust is it in this area, would you say?
I was surprised to find out how many of us there are when the magazine creator, Sam Montgomery Blinn, moved to the area. He started gathering the various sci-fi writers and bringing them together to hang out and have events. And suddenly I'm recognizing all of these people that I've heard of. And then I recognize somebody from college that I just did not know was either local or a writer. And it's been really great to talk to people and support each other and find out, go to book launches. That's a big thing.
You know, it's a fascinating thing. You talked about Sam Montgomery Blinn, whose project Bull Speck is part of the reason this ecosystem, at least in your universe, has come together. How important is it just to have passionate people who really care about that kind of thing expose you to things you never even knew? It's fascinating to see how that project has blossomed and how many people it's brought to our attention simply because he's there caring about this kind of fiction.
I think one thing that's great about Sam that you don't find in a lot of writers is he's organized. So okay. We're going to be the ones who are, you know, crawling to our holes and write. And Sam's going to be the one going, okay, now everyone come outside and we're going to go and we're going to hang out at the regulator. And my wife's going to bring snacks. It's okay. And we all come out a little frightened. And it's just been a lot of fun. Yeah. I really enjoy the events that he puts together, and I feel a lot more connected to the other writers in the area.
You need the guy with the clipboard who's standing in front of the bus, don't you?
No kidding, really. Sam, if you're listening, thank you.
You're working on an experimental series too, right? It's kind of like HBO for ebooks, am I right?
Yes.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
Yes, it's a new digital publishing company called Serial Box, and it is a shared world, which is me and three other people are writing in one world about like a TV show. We're doing 16 episodes with one big story arc, and we're each writing four of the episodes. And it is like The Librarians or Warehouse 13 in the way that it's a group of people who are out trying to make sure that magical things in the world don't cause too much harm. Only our group is with the Vatican trying to stop demonic books from wreaking havoc and bringing demons into the world.
Well, that sounds like a heck of a project. For the Pope and all of you. So good luck with it.
Thank you.
And I guess the title is It Might Well Be Spring. Can you, this is the hat they wear. It's a funny hat. Do you, so this is a series, but it's going to come out a lot quicker than maybe, like if you were writing a series, in a book series, you know, I might have to wait years for the sequel to come out. But in this case, it'll be a couple of weeks, right?
Right, because there are lots of different authors writing. We're more writing long short stories instead of full books. But we're going to be releasing one a week, and then we'll take a couple of weeks off, and then there's going to be another series. So I think we're releasing in four phases.
Very cool. Will you read an excerpt for us?
Yes, this is from the episode 8 called Under My Skin. Our characters are looking into some strange things happening around a tattoo reality show. So they have gone to Vegas to interview one of the people, and they found one of the clients who didn't have a good luck with his tattoo. A very large woman reached the table. "All right, what do you want with Mama Tat?" "I've had my share of stalkers," Mama Tat said, leaning back in her chair that the waitress had pulled up to the booth. "Comes with the reality show territory." In person, she was bigger than ever, tall and broad and muscular, her arms featuring those creepy baby tattoos. Her ruddy face grinned at them, completely unthreatened by the dirty, exhausted strangers in front of her. "I finally decided to turn the tables on them and stalk them back," she said. "My admin tells them where I will be, so I can get a look. I had a tail on you when you left the parlor, but we wondered why you left early for the hospital." "I thought it was too easy to meet up with you," Sally said. "Jet lag has me off my game. When we followed you to the hospital, we saw that you were visiting that nice Mr. Keogh. So I just wanted to straight up and ask you." Mama Tat leaned forward, staring at Sal. "What do you want with Mama Tat?" Sal glanced at Manchu, who nodded. She took a deep breath. "It's come to our attention that every person who has gotten a tattoo from your show up to episode 6 has died. They've all died in different ways, and many of them died at home, so not very many people have realized the connection to the show." The color drained from Mama Tat's face. "All of them? Dead? How do you know?"
That is speculative fiction writer Mer Lafferty. She's reading from episode 8, in fact, of an upcoming online speculative fiction series called Book Burners. She's also one of the many local writers participating in this weekend's inaugural Read Local Book Festival in downtown Durham. You know, whatever the genre, I think a book that has a character called Mama Tat, I'm reading it. How do you think ebooks have changed, or have they, the landscape for spec fiction writers? Is it made it a bigger world, a better world?
Oh, it's huge. Yeah? It's massive. I think it's a bit of a generalization, but I'll say it. I think that geeky people and write speculative fiction, and speculative fiction often goes into tech. So whenever there's new tech going on, the geeks are going to adopt it first. And so with podcast fiction, and I think with ebook self-publishing, it blossomed from science fiction and fantasy first, and then very quickly romance followed, and then many other genres. So it's just huge. If you look at a lot of the people selling a lot in self-publishing ebooks, many of them are science fiction people.
We're talking about the breadth of fiction and writing that goes on in this area that will be celebrated in the Read Local Festival at Durham. And I'm joined now by poet and performance artist Asan Ahanu. And he's been on the show before. He's participating in the Writers in the Ring event at this weekend's Read Local Festival. Asan, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And congratulations on winning the Harvard Hip Hop Fellowship. That's amazing.
Yes, I'm excited about it.
That's terrific. Well, we'll have to have you back when that whole thing is over. But what's the idea between – what's Writers in the Ring? Is it going to be a smackdown?
It's going to be a very exciting smackdown. Chris Vitello is the brains behind this very wild event. And he was inspired by a Peruvian live writing event called Lucha Libre, in which they writers wrote inside of a wrestling ring. And he was – you know, the seed was planted. And so he decided to create an event where – writing is going to happen live. The audience will be able to see it. There'll be surprise prompts that the writers will get once they've taken the stage, and they'll be able to cheer it and veer and lead and guide and hurrah. It's going to be amazing.
It sounds a lot of fun. You're releasing or will be your latest recorded collection of poems and poetry this Saturday. Can you tell us a bit about it and maybe perform a sample for us?
I sure can. Yes, it's called Last Temptation Before Sunrise. And that basically is just a understanding of that usually whenever there's a big breakthrough coming, there's a number of things, whether they're internal or external, that seem to kind of come at you and that you have to kind of resolve or understand or get over in order to be able to fully embrace whatever the next opportunity is. And so at this point, that's where I am. And so I thought it was, you know, the appropriate time to release the project.
Great.
And so in this particular piece is called Metaphor. I'm a papier-mâché comic book that God created beautiful, colorful, perfect for a woman who thinks I'm Mr. Fantastic. But until then, I'll embrace my Sue storms because they remind me of all the natural disasters I'm falling in love with. This is a reminder that Galactus has sucked the life out of the celestial bodies of my past. Listen to the surfer that does his bidding, silver-tongued devil that it is. There's a metaphor there. I tend to do that a lot. It's how I can create a world where I can be everything that I am. I was getting dressed for a show in D.C. in a bathroom beside a homeless man. For a moment, we were exactly the same, both trying to look presentable. Only he lived like this. I was trying to look like I didn't live like him. I'm sorry, Malcolm. Some days we're afraid to be free. I met a woman with a brain tumor who said that she was a builder. After establishing a successful tutorial program, she said she needed something else to build before the high interest loan on her life with the balloon payment at the end foreclosed on her. I met a woman who said that she hadn't written in 6 years since her father committed suicide, says she lost the words. After she saw me perform, she says she found them again. The next morning, she sent me the poem she had wrote that night. The words were bedtime stories. She had finally got used to her father being the one who was always sleeping. I drove into a parking deck with my friends following me. I passed empty opportunity, went up the ramp. They stayed behind me, then cussed me out for passing up the good spots. I was just leaving them the space to choose. How did I become responsible for the inability to make their own decisions? Some days I don't feel like teaching. I write in metaphor because I learned that princes with mediocre work ethic would never become kings here. So I graffiti bridge God's bruised tears to a red reminder that the night doesn't love us and continue to write in metaphor.
That is poet and performance artist Ahsan Ahanu, a sample of his new collection of poems and poetry, The Last Temptation Before Sunrise, also one of the many local writers participating in this weekend's inaugural Read Local Book Festival in downtown Durham. You've said that this collection makes you feel like you're on the cusp of a transition, and now you're going to go to Boston, you're going to do this fellowship. Tell us about the transition and how you plan to use that time at Harvard.
Well, one is just the availability and the possibility to be able to connect with a number of different people. We know Harvard is an international institution that is at the heart of a lot of academic discourse. And so, as a writer and a performance artist and someone who's community minded, to be able to then be able to take my experience here into that arena is going to be useful for me and for the poets here in this community, something that I'll be able to bring back. So I'm excited about that, but it also means that I'm going to be detached for 9 months from this community. And so, you know, this summer will be about preparing for that and making sure that, you know, I'm gone but not forgotten.
Harvard has come a long way and is pretty close to becoming almost as good as the institutions here in North Carolina, don't you think?
I agree. They'll get there eventually.
Well, you know, but you talk about this community, and I was at a Bulls game, Durham Bulls baseball game, a couple of weeks ago, and I had friends from out of town. And we look up on the Jumbotron, and there is Jacoby, the great announcer at the game, and he's interviewing you, Mer Lafferty. And my friend from out of town is at this baseball game, and we're between like sumo wrestling, which had happened between the last inning, and then the kids who catch the termites in their pants. And then this author shows up, and he's talking to a writer. And that's what we do in Durham, don't we? At the baseball game on the Jumbotron with the peanuts and the hot dogs in the air.
That's right. That's right. Durham Bulls, they respect the fantasy. They respect the storytelling. They've got some really good people over there. They have fun with it.
I wish that you had written a better an ending for that particular game, however.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's all great. So great to talk with all of you, Catherine Ash, Mer Lafferty, and Ahsan Ahanu, three of the many writers participating in this weekend's inaugural Read Local Book Festival. You can find out more about each of the writers and the event at our website, stateofthings.org. Oh, guess what? We're going to be at the Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro on Tuesday, and if you're there, you will hear this. It doesn't get any better than that. If you want to be in the audience Tuesday when we have the World Women's World Hollerin' Champion on the show, just send us an email at RSVP at our broadcast. You can RSVP by going to our website, stateofthings.org, and that will show you how you can get to Greensboro and hear that and much, much more. Thanks very much. Coming up, the music of Steph Stewart and the Boyfriends. Stay tuned.